There's another aspect of emotions that we haven't spoken about. And it's very interesting and it's very important. And it's about how emotions give information. And they give information more on a level of feeling than an intellectual level. And sometimes we repress those feelings, and when we repress the feelings, we also repress the information that we can get from the feeling. For example, let's say you do something which is out of alignment with your values. How will you feel? You'll feel guilty because it's not so much intellectual, but on the level of feeling, you feel like you just did something or said something that you know inherently is wrong. Yes? Have you ever done something wrong and not felt guilty?
Unless I don't know about it.
Well, what about rationalizing that it was okay?
That's the tendency in human nature that you create certain situations and feel what I did was right, the other person was wrong.
That's there, but what about, have you ever done something but you didn't want to admit to yourself that it's wrong?
Yes.
Because it's kind of like, it's either you want to do it or you're just embarrassed. Or it's so out of integrity with what you believe, it's hard to admit it. So that happens when we suppress our emotions. Right? And there is a tendency to suppress emotions. Because some things are painful. And some things are painful for the ego, so we don't want to admit that we're not as perfect as we'd like to believe, or we're not as good as we'd like to believe we are, and therefore we'll suppress it. That's one reason we suppress it. When we don't suppress it, we'll feel guilty. And sometimes that feeling of guilty is unpleasant, so we'd rather not feel guilty. So we'll suppress it. Anything that we resist dealing with will tend to suppress. So right now, think of something that you really don't want to deal with in your life, like a problem with another relationship, or something you're not doing that you should be doing, or some characteristic or quality that you're exhibiting that's not good, that you find difficulty changing, and you just don't want to deal with it. Think of something. Is anybody not able to think of something? Something that if someone said, I want you to deal with this, you would just resist it. You say, I don't want to talk about it. Like a lot of times I do marriage counseling, and the woman will come to me and say, we have this problem, but he doesn't want to talk about it. And it's just not comfortable. It's not pleasant. He doesn't think he can improve. Just wants to avoid it. Or you have money problems, and you just don't want to think about it because it's painful. Right? Or you tend to commit offenses, and you don't want to think about it because it always happens. There's something that you want to resist dealing with. So a lot of times what we'll do when we don't want to deal with it, we'll suppress it and kind of tell ourselves, it's not really a problem, it's not a big issue, it's okay. Have you ever done that? Well, has anybody not done that? And so the problem is that you can't solve a problem by running away from it. You can't solve a problem by being numb to how you feel about it, because the feelings actually guide you to correct it. I'll give you an example, a very good example. In our workshop on forgiveness, we do an exercise in which we ask everyone to fully feel your resentment, to visualize an analogy of what it feels like. So we ask everyone, close your eyes and allow yourself to fully feel what your resentment feels like. So someone will say, it feels like I've locked myself in a prison. Someone will say, it feels like I have a cement block on my shoulders. Someone will say, it feels like I'm bathing in an ocean of poison. Someone will say, it feels like I have a rope tied around my neck to this other person. Someone will say, it feels like I have spears in my heart. Right? Now, before we did this exercise, none of those devotees or none of the people that take the course allow themselves to fully experience that, because who wants to experience spears in their heart? Who wants to experience bathing in an ocean of poison? Who wants to experience being locked in a prison? Right? So even though we have the resentment, we don't allow ourselves to feel it. So then you might ask, well, why would you want them to experience something so negative and so painful and so disturbing? And the reason I wanted them to experience it is because I wanted them to realize what they're holding on to, so it would be an impetus to give it up. Because a lot of these people have been holding on to resentment since the time they were 5 or 6 years old. Something happened when they were a kid, and now they're adults. Could be 30, 40 years later. And every time we do the exercise, I ask the question, did you realize how this felt or how this feels to you? And everybody would say, no, I didn't. Because we would never naturally, intuitively allow ourselves to feel that way. Because why would you? Why would you want to feel painful? But the point is, when you allow yourself to feel that way, it becomes an impetus to let it go, because now you realize how bad it is. Does that make sense? So intuitively, we don't feel it, we suppress it. Because we don't realize there's information in those feelings. I'll give you another example. This is actually how I first learned about this. I was very good at suppressing my feelings. And the reason I was good at it was because I equated suppressing feelings with like suppressing sensual desire. Like if you feel something, you feel lust, you feel greed, you feel envy, if you're a devotee, your natural instinct will be, don't go with it, turn it off, it's bad. Dayato vishayam punsan. If I meditate on it, I'm going to get in trouble. So how did I deal with it? How do many people deal with it? They just suppress it, kind of ignore it, put it down. Because we're afraid of it, and we're afraid that it'll lead me into some dangerous situation. So I was doing a workshop run by a devotee, and we were talking about feelings, and the devotee said to me that your feelings will guide you, so allow yourself to feel them. And to me, that was very awkward, because I thought, if I allow myself to feel them, then they're going to lead me down. So she said, well, just try it. So I said, okay, I'll try it. So at that point in time, I had been engaged in running a business, and sometimes I was working like 12, 13, 14 hours, and I'd go to bed late, and I wouldn't get up early, and I wouldn't go to the temple. So that was about after 30 years of maybe missing one Mangal Artik, and you know, every year, basically for 30 years, I was always there. So naturally I was feeling guilty, but I was suppressing that feeling because I felt like I was letting Prabhupada down. And that's such a painful feeling, to feel like you're letting your guru down, isn't it? It's like you can't really even look at their picture because you feel so bad. Have you had that experience? Any of you? Like you let your guru down and it's like, I don't even want to confront it. It's just, it's too painful to deal with. So I just didn't want to think about it, you know. Or subconsciously I would just rationalize, well, I'm busy and I have to get enough rest, so I just can't keep up with all my material duties and rise as early as I used to. So it was a very painful feeling. So this devotee said, well, just go with that feeling. So the next morning, I allowed myself to fully embrace that guilt, fully experience that I was letting Prabhupada down, and totally face it and own it. And you know what happened? What? Kind of. Well, what happened was, by confronting it, I experienced how painful it was. And it made me realize that getting up early and following the program is less painful than having to live with the guilt of not doing it. And I wouldn't have realized that if I didn't confront it, if I didn't allow myself to fully experience it. Isn't that interesting? It was only on that day that I fully experienced it that I realized that was much more painful than just pushing myself out of bed or getting myself to bed early. Because when I don't, I have to live with that pain. And as long as I suppressed it, I wouldn't have that realization. So allowing yourself to experience your own emotions gives you information and guides you. So it's really bad to suppress them. Now you might be thinking, but what if I'm feeling lusty? How can I allow myself to fully experience that lust and get guidance? So I'm going to give you a little secret. Would you like to hear? Because you can do it. It's very interesting. And I don't know if anyone's taught you this. You don't feel your lust, but you feel how it feels to be lusty. You understand the difference? It's one stage removed. I don't go with my lust. If I feel my lust, dayato vishayam punsam, then attachment, then action. I'm not feeling my lust, I'm feeling what my lust feels like. You see the difference? Okay, what does lust feel like? Kind of feels animalistic, doesn't it? Yes? Okay. So, a devotee comes up to me and says, I'm feeling lusty. Then they say, allow yourself to feel, experience what that lust feels like. And if they do it, it's a very bad feeling. And they'll say something like, I feel dirty. I feel like I'm letting my spiritual master down. I feel like I'm ignoring Prabhupada's instructions. I'm ignoring everything I've learned. Someone might say, I feel like a dog, actually. But that's good, because that sobers you, doesn't it? If you feel like a dog, it's a bad feeling, but it sobers you. Because you realize, I'm thinking right now and feeling right now like an animal, not like a devotee. So I'm feeling what I'm feeling. Not feeling the lust, but feeling what it feels like to have lust. One stage removed. And you get information, and it purifies you. Just like sometimes we have this example of a devotee talking to his mind or talking to himself, my dear mind, just fix yourself in the lotus feet of Krishna. Right? We have this in our tradition, prayers to the mind, mana shiksha, and so forth. So if you allow yourself to feel what you're feeling, then you can start talking to yourself and say, how do you feel? And you say, Mahatma, you're such an animal right now. Just stop it. Right? You become very clear on what's going on, and you can kind of reason with yourself. I'm feeling envious. How does envy feel? This is one of the worst feelings that's known, isn't it? Envy and anger and jealousy. So if you allow yourself to feel it, and you ask yourself, how does this feel? You'll say, this feels horrible. You'll say, I feel this is very demoniac. I don't feel this is anything connected with Krishna consciousness. And that will bring you back. It will be an impetus. Does that make sense? Yes? So there's a lot of information within your emotions, and if you allow yourself to experience them, you will get that information, and that information will guide you to become more aligned with your values. That's just how it works. If you deny it, if you deny your emotions, if you deny your feelings, then you can't go into this stage of remorse where you correct yourself. And remorse is important. Because remorse is how we do self-correction. Right? So it's not wrong to feel guilty, it's not wrong to feel remorseful. It's not wrong to feel negative emotions. In fact, you can't not feel them because you are feeling them. You know, someone might say, well, I don't want to feel a negative emotion. And oftentimes, that's too late because you already are. Right? So you're not always in control of how you feel. But then what do you do with that feeling once it's there? Right? So, if you feel remorseful and you correct yourself, it's good. If you feel guilty and you correct yourself, it's good. If you feel lusty or envious, but you allow yourself to experience it and you correct yourself, it's good. Here's where you get into the problem. You feel extremely guilty or extremely remorseful. Or you feel that I am so low or so fallen, I can't correct myself. Then you start wailing in your depression. Oh, I'm so bad. I'm so guilty, I've done something so wrong. That's when you run into trouble, right? So, Prabhupada said a little guilt is good, because a little guilt can spin you around, because it kind of resets your compass. But if you allow yourself to wallow in your guilt, then that pushes you down in the mode of ignorance, and handicaps you, and then you won't do anything. You'll think, what's the use? Right? So you want to use it to empower you to change. Does that make sense? Does anyone have any question on that?
Is it correct that the first step is to learn to identify our senses? Because sometimes we are not aware that we are feeling something.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's do an exercise. Feel what you're feeling right now. What do you feel? Maybe some of you are thinking, oh no, that was heavy. What's he going to say next? He's exposing me. Anybody feeling like that? Maybe you're feeling, that was really good. I wonder what he's going to say next. You know, this is really helping me. Maybe someone is feeling, I already know all this. This is boring. Or some of you are just feeling, I'm so happy to be here in my place. Just sit with your feeling for a second and just feel what you're feeling. You know what you're feeling? What are you feeling?
It's a little hard for me to express in English, it's not my first language, but it's very interesting for me and very nice to listen to you.
Okay. Thank you. You're feeling... You can't feel interesting. There's something else you have to feel. Interesting is... It's not a feeling. Maybe enlightening. I feel enlightened. I feel that I'm learning. So, yeah, okay. Anyone else want to share what they're feeling? Or you can also share what you were feeling today. You know, women have about 60 feelings a day, 60 different emotions. Men have about 2. When they wake up and when they go to sleep. You can go on the internet and you can see the, what do you call the faces? What's the name of those?
Emoticons.
Yeah. You can see 50 emoticons for women and 2 for men. Anyway, the point is a lot of us don't know what we're feeling. We're just not connected to what we're feeling. And it becomes a problem when those feelings can give you information. Just like intuition is a strong feeling to do something or not do something. And now I have some sad stories for you from the annals of ISKCON history. There are several devotees, and there are probably more that I don't know, but several devotees who told me that marriages were arranged for them. And everybody said, it's good, you should do it. And intuitively, they felt, I shouldn't. But they were young devotees, and as a young devotee, they thought, what my seniors are telling me is what I should do. And they did it, and it didn't work out. And they remember to this day, in some cases it's 30, 35 years later, that intuitively, I felt this wasn't going to work. Now, there's a problem, and I think a lot of us have this problem, especially when we're younger devotees. We're afraid of our intuition because we think whatever I think or feel must be Maya. Right? Yes? Right. So then, Prabhupada said, intelligence is the form direction of the supersoul. It's in the second canto. Intelligence is the form direction of the supersoul. Prabhupada said there's no such thing as instinct. Instinct is Paramatma. So when you feel an instinct, that's coming from Krishna. Now, it's kind of like, it's sounding like I'm saying whatever you intuitively feel is true. It may not be true, but it may be. And I think a lot of us have learned to suppress our emotions out of fear that we're not advanced enough to know what's right. And then Krishna gives us some intuitive signal, do this, don't do that, and we ignore it. And we ask somebody, what do you think? And then they give us some advice that may go against our intuition. And then down the road, we regret it, and we tell ourselves, I should have listened. Have any of you had that experience? Raise your hand if you've had it. Practically everybody. So that's, it's an interesting topic. And we have to understand it with balance. But sometimes we get very strong, we get a very strong intuition about something. Yes? Like really, really strong. And generally when devotees ask me what they should do when they have strong intuition, I say follow it and see what happens and be open enough to see if it doesn't work, don't continue. But sometimes your intuition is spot on, or most of the time, if not all the time, because Krishna created it that way. Another time Prabhupada said that intelligence is the next door neighbor of the soul. So really, it's the way Paramatma communicates to us is through intelligence. I just read something today. We were doing a recording of a workshop today, and I read something called My Conversation with Krishna. And it was a conversation between me and Krishna, and I wrote the script, what Krishna said and what I said. And it represents the Siddhanta about karma. So Belen was recording that, and she said, was that an actual real conversation that you had with Krishna? I said, well, it didn't come, the words didn't come here, but the words came here and I wrote them down, so it must have been a conversation. Because everything that Krishna says can be backed up in scripture. So I didn't hear the words, they didn't come channeled and I just typed them in, but it came as an inspiration. So a lot of times we learn that way through the heart. Where Krishna resides, Adami Buddha Yogamtam, I give intelligence. So I think we need to have a little more faith in that intelligence. In fact, there's one purport, amazing purport, I don't know if you're aware of it, in which Prabhupada said that the duty of the spiritual master is to get the disciple in touch with the supersoul. And once the disciple is in touch with the supersoul, the duty of the spiritual master is finished. As he's completed his duty because now you're guided by the supersoul. Isn't that interesting? So then you're thinking, well, is Krishna really speaking to me? I'm not a pure devotee. But Krishna guides you according to your sincerity. If Krishna weren't guiding you, you wouldn't be here. You would have left long ago. Yes?
We're not in intuition. Intuition in relationship to ourself and our life.
Yes.
A lot of times you get intuition, especially if we have kids, about their decisions. and things in their life. So we may have very strong intuition about something that
right.
is from our heart and not from our mind, but they're not willing to hear this. So therefore, this creates conflict.
Yeah.
So
how do you deal with that? Well, and your intuition is correct? Most of the time? All of the time?
When it's based on compassion rather than sentimentality, so it is, you know, so it's not like the result is for you. The,
yeah.
You know, so you know it's...
Okay. I would say two things. I would say two things. One thing is, sometimes it may be right, but because they can't hear it, then it's not right. Because it just disturbs the relationship, because they're not ready to hear it. Another thing, in terms of parenting, it's like the boy who cried wolf. He keeps crying wolf, and then you just don't hear it. So if you're always telling them what to do, it's going to be harder to say, I have a strong intuition, you should do this. Whereas if you're not always telling them, and you sit them down and say, I feel really strongly, Krishna's really telling me, this is not going to be good for you. And you only tell them that like once every 6 months or once a year, they'll probably listen.
So if you feel something, you can put it there, but be detached and
always, with kids, always, yeah. Sometimes the only way we can learn is to make mistakes. And, you know, like, go up to someone and say, would you like some good advice? How many people will say, sure. Or devotees will say, hey, I got enough good advice, you know. I could give you some, you know. I'm not even following 1/10 of the good advice I've been given. So it's not that everyone's so open to it. So even Prabhupada's kids.
And sometimes we hear stuff, even if we understand it on an intellectual level, it takes an actual while for it to really
be able to understand. Yeah. And sometimes the kids have to grow. Realizing yourselves that the best way. You know, a lot of times kids will say, you know, I should have listened to you, but I didn't. And now I realize what you were telling me was true. Right? So, yeah. Yes?
How do you differentiate with, like, it's an intuition that means call from the Paramatma or a voice from your head? Like,
oh, how do you differentiate between... It's just something that you want to do that has no relation to Scripture. Yeah. I think if a devotee is very sincere and very detached, they're going to get good guidance. And they're, you know, and they're sane. They're not mentally ill. Yeah. If you have a tendency towards materialism or sense gratification, if you have a tendency to rationalize things, you're not self-honest, then you can get in trouble. If you have a tendency to be very honest, very sincere, fairly detached, you just want to do the right thing, then you're in a good position to get guided by Krishna. And a lot of times, even with Prabhupada, he would say, well, I know what I want, but we have to see what Krishna wants. So sometimes you don't always know. And you may not always know until you do it. But if you're detached enough and you do it and it doesn't work out, then you can acknowledge it. If you're attached, you'll rationalize it or you'll keep trying. Right? So I find that sincerity and detachment is really, really important. And prayer, Krishna, guide me. Please give me the intelligence to know what's the right thing to do. So if that sincerity is there, then you're in a good position to be guided. And that also requires being in touch with your emotions, because sometimes you might feel like this is wrong, but you deny that feeling because you want to do it. And that happens a lot with newlyweds, not newlyweds, with people who want to get married, and all their friends are saying, don't do it, it's not going to work. You know, he's a bum, or she just wants your money. You know, your friends really see through it, and you don't want to hear it. Right? So, well, the astrology wasn't good. Our parents don't like it. Most of my friends think I'm crazy, but we really love one another. And we really think we want to do this, you know. So If you allow yourself to get too attached to something, how can you allow then Krishna to give you intelligence? Because you just want a certain result. And you just want to hear that this what I'm doing is good. So that's why I say I have to be sincere and detached. Right? Does that make sense? Does that make rupees? Cents? Pounds? Pesos? So, one thing that's really, really important, I want to stress this, whatever you're resisting dealing with, whatever you're resisting feeling with, that's what you need to feel and that's what you need to deal with. No, no, you shouldn't marry her. I don't want to hear about it, don't tell me. That means you need to hear about it. I really want to do this. Everyone's saying don't. I don't want to hear what they have to say. Because you're resisting, it means you're suppressing. Because you're resisting, it means it's painful. And it means it's upsetting your life, and it means you need to deal with it. A lot of times we have financial problems. We resist, we ignore them, and then they get worse. A lot of times we have relation problems. We exist, we go into what we call denial. Oh, he's in denial about this. He thinks everything's fine. What does denial mean? It means resisting a reality. Resisting allowing yourself to feel what's actually happening. And when you allow yourself to feel, you get information. A lot of times in relationships, something is wrong. You can feel it. It doesn't feel right. But you don't want to confront it because you don't know how to improve it. Or it's too painful. And the relationship erodes. Because you go into denial. Yes?
You suggested you do this exercise with all the feelings that you have. How do you distinguish between the ones that are worth doing to get into it?
Do them forever. It just becomes a state of being. It's not like you choose, it's just the way you are. You stop denying. I guess it's harder to feel if you're from England. Because you got trained not to feel or something.
They're more reserved.
Yeah, I know.
In terms of some things you just think it's not practical to just deal with, because you don't want to, not that you don't want to, but it's just not practical, or it's just, you don't think it's worth dealing with, but then you're not conscious about how much it's practical.
Okay, so then allow yourself to feel how that feels and see where it takes you. The feeling of it's not practical and I don't want to deal with it. Just see what happens. See if you get any guidance from those feelings. Just for the sake of an exercise. Yes. Is that hard to, is it you're trying to figure out how to do that or
yeah. What?
Feelings are in the present feelings just mean what's happening right now. Just allow yourself to stop being in denial about what's going on and how you feel and just like face it. Like,
I think being honest about it is okay. To do that in order to be like sincere is not
okay, be honest about it and then be honest how you feel about it. Okay, this is let's put this phone to test. Right, this is an iPhone 4. It doesn't take pictures as well as an iPhone 6. It's just a fact. It's slower than iPhone 6. The screen isn't as bright as an iPhone 6, etc. It's just facts. How do you feel about it? I feel fine about it. I feel, you know, it's good for the earth. I don't always buy a new phone. I keep old phones. I keep old cars. I keep old computers. I feel fine about it. How do I feel about it? I feel like I'm a loser. All I could afford is an iPhone 4. Right. Whatever. I don't know how you feel about it. But just deal with the facts, the reality, and see how you feel. And maybe I feel like I should have an iPhone 6 because I think I'm special. And then I realize I'm just proud.
What if those feelings are just transitory, so you just go from one to the other? Like, you know, like, right now you feel satisfied, but a new one comes out, and then you get it, and then you feel, oh, I didn't really want it.
Then take it back. You're supposed to think like that before you buy it. You know, a lot of your feelings are contextual, according to your culture, according to your paradigm. You know, when you change paradigms, you change the way you feel about things. Like, let's say you really get into, oh, I'll give you an example. There's a blog called minimalist.com, so it's all about simplifying. So the way they teach people how to simplify is they say, pack up everything in your house and then take out what you need for 3 weeks. And after 3 weeks, see if you need anything else. And you don't. So basically, what you need for 3 weeks is like 20% of what you own. And so most of us could live without 80%, right? So when you see that, you think, oh, that's interesting. That's a paradigm shift. And you might realize, why am I buying all these things? I already have 80% more than I need. So by the paradigm shift, it will change your feelings about acquiring the latest and greatest gear and gizmos and gadgets, right? So perceptual changes how you feel, right? How do you feel about farming? How do you feel about farmers? What do you think? They're just simple, they're peasants, they're losers. Or do you think, these are the real people, they're in touch with the earth, they're grounded, they're the most godly, they're the most normal. And the people sitting in those cubicles writing software are the most weird people that God ever created, right? Now, if you listen to your parents, they'll tell you, you need to sit in a cubicle and write software because that's normal, right? If you spend time in a village, you spend time with people on the land, you learn about the earth, you learn about ecology, then you start to think, those are the normal people, and the people in the cities are totally perverted. They don't even know where a tomato grows. Does it grow on a tree? Does it grow on the ground? They have no idea. They've never even seen it. They've never even seen a cow being milked. They've never actually got their hands dirty. Right? For the last zillion years, that's how people lived. And after the Industrial Revolution, it changed. So it's a paradigm shift. So now when you see that guy sitting, you know, the IT graduate sitting writing software, you think, you have a different emotional response to it because of the context, based on what you know. So one of the great lessons, if you want to change feeling, is change context, change perception. And by changing perception, your feelings will change, you know. Like, you get married and someone says, oh, Prabhu, you're entering the dark well, and you know once you get in, you might never get out. Do we have any more? And you know, Prabhu, you know that women are like witches in the day and tigers at night. Did you know that? And you know that household life is like a big pit where people pass stool in it. And did you know that the heart of a woman is like a razor? Did you know that? Well, now you know. And now he's thinking, I gotta call my fiance and tell her it's off. All of a sudden he has different feelings about women because he has different information.
Based on what you receive, what you're hearing, and based on what you're hearing, you're reading.
Based on what you're hearing, what you're experiencing also, and what is going around in your environment, the examples you're seeing. Yeah, so it's contextual. Like, so much of our reactions to situations are contextual, right? Like, I've spent a lot of time in developing countries, right? And I know how they think. So it's helped me because I visit many, many countries and I can just adapt to all kinds of people because I had to learn how to adapt to a new culture. So I can appreciate people that maybe others wouldn't appreciate. They would think, but these people are really, they're not very smart. They're extremely simple, you know. They're educated, but they don't really seem like it. And the way they do things is really weird. And they're always finding fault with one another. They're really small-minded and political and really petty, right? But having lived through that and knowing the people and knowing the culture, I understand why they're like that. And what you see on the surface is not really what they're like. So I won't get upset dealing with them. But if you go to that country with me, after a few weeks, you're going to go crazy. You're going to say, what's going on here? Why are they doing things this way? This doesn't make sense. And you realize it makes perfect sense to them. And if you try to change it, you can't. You just have to go along with it. Yeah, yeah.
So that's why basic intelligence you can study and understand. And
yeah,
then
yeah.
Once you're in the experience.
Yeah. You want to change the way you feel about something, you have to change the way you look at it. And when you look, just like, let's say, you're always asking stupid questions. And I'm thinking, why? It's like getting to me. Why does he ask all these stupid questions? Right? And then someone comes up afterwards, and I'm just making this up, I'm not saying this, it says, actually he's got a mental disease, and he doesn't understand things well. So that's why he asks questions that are kind of stupid, and he keeps asking the same questions, because he forgets that he asks them. And I say, oh, okay, now I understand. So now it doesn't bother me. So, if you know somebody is a certain way, and they're doing things that bother you, if you accept that this is just how they are and this is how they're going to do it, and you're going to expect those reactions, then you're okay. You can better deal with it.
You know, that's why I think like the disc profile is quite useful in terms of evaluating.
Yeah. Yes?
In that example you gave of intuition, where after 30 years of problems,
yeah. Okay, all right. Well, let's use the example here. You would be really a good match for him, and he's an important devotee, and he needs a good wife. And you're a good devotee, and he's a good devotee, and you're about the same age, and therefore you should get married. So the assumption there is, because he's a good devotee and you're a good devotee, it's a good match, right? I think the answer to your question is based on knowledge. What we thought in the old days was, if you marry two good devotees, you get a good marriage. What we realize today is that's not necessarily true. You can marry two bad devotees and get a good marriage, and marry two good devotees and get a bad marriage. You could marry two really good karmis and get a good marriage. Right? So, now if I'm thinking, well, my temple president told me it's a good idea, so therefore I should do my duty and marry this girl. Right? And some senior godbrother comes up to you and says, I don't think your temple president really understands who this girl is. And, you know, he's been divorced twice, which indicates to me he doesn't really understand a lot about women and marriage, so I don't think you should listen to him. I think, well, that's not what we're trained to do. We're trained to listen to our temple president, right? But sometimes we have to use our intelligence also and say, okay, he's my temple president, I follow him, I listen to him, but this is a big thing, so I can't just do this blindly, right? Like, you know, you're 25 years old and he says, take sannyas. Are you going to do it? Naturally, you want to think about it. Is this right for me? Is this the right decision? Right. So in the early days of our movement, we were pushing people to get married. We were pushing people to take sannyas who weren't qualified. And we were doing it in the name of duty. And then we realized two things. That as leaders, we have to be careful. And as followers, we also have to be a little aware of the qualifications or lack thereof of the leaders. Because the just realities of ISKCON is that we need leaders and we don't have enough, and who's ever willing to do it, there's a temple for him to lead, whether or not he's capable. Isn't it? And at least in outside of India, right? So it's not that we don't want to be dutiful, but at the same time, we don't want to be stupid. We want to be intelligent about what we do. And what I think it's really bad if we're in the consciousness that we can't think for ourselves, that, that only my authorities can think for me, because that's when we turn off from our intuition. We don't hear it, we turn it off. Then we think, it must be wrong because they're telling me to do this. Right? So, it's possible the authority may not be right. Now, it gets a little more sticky when it's your guru. And he tells you to do something, and you intuitively feel that's not good. Now, how do you deal with that? Because we have that reality also, don't we? Right? And sometimes we had that with Prabhupada. And sometimes we'd say, Prabhupada, I don't think it's a good idea. And he would discuss it. Or sometimes he wouldn't discuss it. He said, I told you to do it, do it. One of the things that I tell my disciples is that if I ever tell you to do something and you just feel it's the wrong thing, please tell me. Because I don't want you to tell me 5 years after you've done it and crashed on your face and did not have been told Maya, and then you tell me, I didn't feel that was a good instruction. Because a guru doesn't always know everything about the disciple, especially when he has many thousands of disciples, and you're trying to explain your situation in 2 minutes, because that's all he has for you. Right? So, these are just practical realities. And I just hate to see when devotees turn their intuition off, turn their intelligence off, because they're told to do something, and inside they feel like this is not a good decision. Because I feel, I could just present myself as a leader, I feel that I want to know if I give an instruction to somebody and they just feel it's wrong. I would like to know immediately. Why do you feel that way? Because maybe I didn't consider something. Or maybe I didn't consider their nature. Right? So ultimately, we want the goal is to be Krishna conscious, and we want to analyze everything in terms of Krishna consciousness. So in general, yes, we want to follow our authorities. That's what we do. But we don't want to turn off our intelligence. See, one of the dangers that you have is that you have a philosophy which teaches you to be dependent on Guru and Krishna. But that dependency can make you weak, and it can turn off your mind and intelligence. Because then you become so dependent that you can't be inspired and you can't act intelligently on your own. So Prabhupada said you should feel like a fool before your spiritual master. What he meant is that you should feel humble. You shouldn't feel like, well, I know everything and you can't tell me anything. But he said you shouldn't act like a fool. Right? So you should feel like a fool, that's humility. But he's not saying don't use your intelligence. Feel like a fool, act like a fool. To prove that you feel like a fool, you have to act like a fool. No, so he says the opposite. Feel like a fool, but don't act like one. You feel